Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 23rd of May. What is happening to the nation's honeybees? Scientists and beekeepers have been alarmed recently, noticing a strange die-off last year. And now the syndrome, which is called colony collapse disorder, has spread to nearly half the states in this country and is responsible for killing as many as 90% of the hives in some places. Europe is also giving similar reports. Disappearing bees also reported in Brazil. Jerry Hayes is with us this hour, who is chief of the apiary section at Florida's Department of Agriculture. This colony collapse disorder was first found in Florida last fall, and he says it's just gotten more confusing and frustrating as the months have gone by. There's a two-day workshop in Washington this week looking at scientists will be pooling their knowledge and coming up with a plan of action to combat this disorder. And also there will be congressional hearings coming up on this within the next couple weeks. Honeybees are used to pollinate $15 billion worth of fruits, nuts, and other crops annually. So you could see a real collapse of agriculture in this country if this problem does not get taken care of. We've had a lot of interest in this subject. I'm sure we'll get many calls this hour. You are welcome to join us, as always, by calling 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Should you be joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Jerry Hayes, chief of the apiary section at Florida's Department of Agriculture, is with us. Hello, Jerry. Thanks so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you, Kathleen. I look forward to it.
Now, this was first noticed in Florida last fall. What were you seeing in Florida?
Well, honeybees, being livestock agriculture, have always died, and beekeepers certainly have struggled in the past with die-off from parasitic mites and what have you. But one beekeeper, David Hackenberg, noticed that his colonies were dying in a different and significant way, and he brought it to our attention, and it was different and dramatic and significant. And then when we started looking, we started seeing it not only more in Florida but throughout the United States.
Mm-hmm. The bees are just leaving the colonies. It's not as though there are a lot of dead bees around. They leave and they don't come back.
Yes, they leave and they don't come back, and this is different than asexual reproduction by swarming or absconding, where a whole colony will leave. This is where the colony appears well and healthy. The foragers go out and don't return, seemingly not knowing how to get back home. Mm. So after a period of 3 to 6 weeks, the colony loses a vast majority of its population.
You were quoted in something I read as saying that this has just gotten more confusing and frustrating as the months have gone by. Would you stick by that now, or is it less confusing?
I think it is still confusing. We certainly are looking at samples, and they're giving us maybe some more direction of where to look and what to look for. But, of course, in the research community, everyone always likes that smoking gun, that one mm-hmm. primary cause, and we, as of yet, still have not found that.
Mm-hmm. What about this insecticide? I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Neonicotinoids. There's an active ingredient that's been banned in some countries in Europe because of its association with damaging pollinators. Is this something that scientists and people like you are looking at carefully?
Yes, neonicotinoids are a class of chemicals that actually replaced organophosphates, which was a good thing in our environment. But one of the problems that has been noted over the years is this material is used pervasively in agriculture and backyard gardens and lawn treatments and even flea and tick things is that it kills bad insects tremendously well, but many times people forget about the good insects, the pollinators, and being insects, it also does negative things to them as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we've been using, though, materials like that for some time. Why would we notice a die-off now?
Well, and I don't know that this is, the one thing, but, the information, the data on neonicotinoids is very tantalizing. For instance, termites, a highly social insect like a honeybee colony, which is a very social organism. On termites, when neonicotinoids, especially ones called imidacloprid, are used, it causes the termites to forget how to get home, and it causes their immune systems to collapse so that funguses and other things kill them. And so this is, you know, what's happening to honeybees. But, you know, honeybees aren't being treated with these things to kill them. So they're obviously picking them up in the environment in sublethal doses. And so the question is, in sublethal doses, what does all that mean?
Right. What about cell phones? Have you read anything about cell phones?
Yeah. My colleagues and I kind of chuckle about that.
Do you?
Yeah. We don't put a whole lot of credence in that. Actually, if you read the whole paper from Germany, the data really isn't there to point your finger at cell phones.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is already quite serious. Tell me if it is this serious. I've read that the rapid die-offs have already put, well, I'm wondering if they've already, or when we will notice the ramifications of this, put one-third of U.S. food crops in peril. That's a lot of food.
Well, yeah, about a third of the food you and I eat every day, honeybees are responsible for pollinating it. And our whole agriculture production is based on one pollinator, the honeybee. We could certainly go back to eating, you know, wind-pollinated rice and corn and wheat, but with our growing population, it probably isn't going to happen. So honeybees taking pollen from one flower to another so that a watermelon or a squash or an apple or a cherry can be produced is the only way you can do it. And without honeybees, this is significant.
I know there's a conference in Washington this week. There's supposed to be congressional hearings on this. When do you think, and how problematic is it to pinpoint what's going on here, Jerry?
Well, we've been involved in this since about last October and taken hundreds and hundreds of samples of not only of the bees, but beeswax, their home, the pollen, which is called bee bread that the bees eat, and trying to find some commonality of where beekeepers have been on a commercial basis and what might be happening. Obviously, every day we get a little bit closer. We just need, you know, the resources to move this even faster.
Mm-hmm. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. I guarantee you we'll get a ton of calls on this, so call early. What about other parts of the world? I mentioned Brazil. I mentioned Europe. Are there other parts of the world also noticing this colony collapse disorder?
Yeah, I've had reports from Brazil and from China that symptoms are similar in those countries as well. And so the question is it because of production agriculture and there's some commonality of pesticides being used, or in our global economy, is there some new pathogen, or is there a pathogen now that's become more pathogenic that's been spread around? These are all the kind of questions we're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Let's welcome phone calls. We have many of them coming in already. Marty from Spring Prairie is our first caller. Jerry, hi. Marty, your phone is kind of lousy, so let's see if we can hear you.
Okay, I can hear you really well. Good morning, and I really appreciate having this program. I've been wanting to find somebody to tell this to. I was applying a broadleaf herbicide with a hose end sprayer about 2 weeks ago, and when I was done spraying my yard, I noticed every single one of my pollinators was dead.
Hmm.
And I've still found dying bumblebees several days later.
Hmm.
I'm really concerned about that because I had no warning at all that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a gardener, and I depend on my pollinators.
Yeah, Jerry.
Yeah, and Marty, you know, the awkward thing about that is you probably use whatever chemical you were according to label directions, but in many homeowner products, they don't even mention honeybees or pollinators on them for some strange reason. There's a real disconnect with EPA and what they approve based on how to protect pollinators. So many times, even the homeowner projects are in higher doses or higher concentrations than things used in agriculture. So to think that a homeowner product is user-friendly, for neophytes like us who are backyard gardeners, you really need to be careful.
Mm-hmm. There are also problems, aren't there, with other insects, termite colonies? Am I getting this right? That they haven't been able to remember how to get home to? Is there a problem here?
Well, yeah, and that's what I mentioned earlier about imidacloprid, which is a neonicotinoid, which is used to control termites. It does a good job. But yes, one thing it does is because neonicotinoids are a neurotoxin. They affect nerves, the brain of these insects, and they lose direction. They don't know how to get back to the colony and die. And then also on termites, they forget how to groom themselves and keep themselves clean. And as a result, funguses, which are normal, now attack the termites and kill them and finish them off. So it does a good job. But a termite's an insect, and so's a honeybee.
Mm-hmm. What's happening to beekeepers in this country? I would imagine that many of them are suffering severe financial problems now, aren't they?
Yes, they are, and they have been. Beekeepers and the honeybee industry is you know, I hate to use this term, but I'll go ahead and do it, has always been the ugly stepsister of agriculture. They've always been assumed to be around, even though they are vital to agriculture. And in the past, this has been true, but nobody has given much concern to them. And in the past, beekeepers have traditionally made their money by producing honey. Honey is a wonderful product, but it's basically a byproduct of pollination.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chinese now are bringing in honey for about 50 cents a pound at the dock, and our cost of production in the U.S. for honey is about $1 a pound. So this is not a good model. So any beekeepers who are producing honey to make their business can't do that very well now, and so the industry may be transitioning to a fee-based pollination model. But with bees being killed off like they are for known and unknown reasons, this is even worse.
Right. Thanks very much for the call. We go to Paul from New Berlin next. Hi, Paul.
Hi, thanks. I was wondering if the reason was there genetic accumulations of contaminated pollen at the hives that people are not, I mean, the bees are no longer going back, or is there electromagnetic field shifts? You've possibly suggested could be part of their confusion of getting back, or is their cellular phone, the waves, are they impacting their ability to sense what's going on? What theories are you exploring?
Well, we're looking at primarily pathogens and chemicals, chemicals that are affecting the immune system of the bees and affecting their neurology and then how this all interrelates. The awkward thing about all this is that there is no commonality. Some beekeepers have experienced this severely, losing 90% of thousands of colonies, and other beekeepers haven't. So there is a difference, and genetics certainly plays a part in this. The honeybee gene pool is pretty shallow in the U.S. We have just started importing bees from Australia. But there's some concern that the bees from Australia may have be bringing in some viruses or things that may be impacting our colony as well. So it's all still a little bit murky, Paul.
Mm-hmm. So who's studying all of this, Jerry? Who's going to come up with the answer?
Well, we have a very good group called the Colony Collapse Working Group. And primarily it's my office in Florida, Pennsylvania State University, Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture, University of Montana, USDA, North Carolina State University, Columbia University, and some others. So we have a lot of smart people with some really expensive equipment, and we'll be able to figure out. We just hope it's sooner than later.
Mm-hmm. Do you worry that the honeybees are on their way to becoming extinct?
Honeybees are a survivor. They've been around for millions of years, and they've seen global warming, and they've seen ice ages, and now they exist almost from pole to pole. I certainly hope not. You know, we don't have to have an extinction of this species in order to have ramifications with the human population. We could just have a lot of weak colonies that can't go out and pollinate efficiently enough, and then people would certainly notice it at the grocery store level.
Oh, yeah. Let's welcome more phone calls in a moment. Jerry Hayes is our guest, Apiary Inspection Assistant Chief for the Florida Department of Agriculture. We are looking at the disappearance of honeybees all over this country, also in Europe, in China, and in Brazil. what's happening is the question. And what does it mean to be losing these honeybees due to colony collapse disorder? And our phones are just going crazy. So here's the number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow, long about this time, Elizabeth Edwards will be our guest to talk about her husband, the campaign, and we'll be looking at the role of spouses in this year's presidential campaign season, which is endless. So that will be the second hour of our program tomorrow, this hour. Let's go back to phone calls. What is happening to honeybees, which is our conversation this hour. And Jerry Hayes is our guest, apiary inspection assistant chief for the Florida Department of Agriculture. Stephen from Madison, hi.
The question is posed, what it means to have colony collapse. I think it's a harbinger of the human colony collapse. We live in a sea of EMF, all of these gadgets that we're purchasing. And that stuff, EMF, disrupts cellular communication, getting nutrients and rid of wastes, immune system breakdown. So the honeybees are the canary in the mine, and we've opened up the Pandora's box.
Do you think that the honeybees are the canary in the mine, Jerry?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I was able to make a presentation to the National Academy of Sciences last year, and they've actually recently come out with their report, Loss of Pollinators in North America, and that was my tagline as well. The federal government asked the national academies to look at the loss of pollinators in North America from a strategic standpoint. How much of our food production do we want to turn over to other countries that might be our friends now but might not be our friends in the future? And do we want to get into the same situation with energy oil production that we are now, that I can say, Kathleen, you can have an apple, but it's going to cost you $37.
Yeah, right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Jeremy from Racine. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi. Great topic. Thanks for taking my call. My question relates to mitigating mosquitoes. My wife and I have some standing water in our backyard, and we were looking at these mosquito dunk type products to prevent the mosquito larva from hatching. Mm-hmm. And we read on the package that it would kill the bees. And so we're wondering, I guess first, if that could be contributing to the problem, and second, is there another safer way to mitigate mosquitoes without potentially harming the bees?
Well, thank you, Jeremy. Anything that will kill an insect or harm an insect will do that to honeybees, because they're insects and they go and collect food, and they would collect the water from where the mosquitoes are as well. And honeybees, because they can forage efficiently in about a 2-2.5 mile radius of their colony, can bring back all sorts of environmental and agricultural toxins to their colony, and beeswax is a chemical sponge, so it will soak it up, and the bees will be exposed to these probably sublethal doses of things, 24/7, 365. There are some BT products, Bacillus thuringiensis products, that can be used as floats in some mosquito control situations, and most BT products do not harm honeybees, so you might want to take a look at that.
Oh, great. Was it BT, you said?
Yeah, BT, capital B, capital T, and they're kind of donut-shaped things, and they'll float in standing water and release this bacterium, which kills mosquitoes but doesn't hurt other insects.
Hmm. Okay.
Thanks, Jeremy. Yeah, thanks for your call. Arlene is next from New Berlin. Hi, Arlene.
Good morning. I'm very glad you had this program. I'm wondering if two things. I'm wondering if urban sprawl has a lot to do with the area for bees to be, to have a hive or whatever. And, the influx of food from other countries is really making me very angry. Our government is destroying all our farmlands and everything else, and we're going to rely on other people, and I don't like it. And I'll take my question off the air.
Thanks, Arlene.
Thank you, Arlene. I appreciate that. You're right. Loss of habitat is not only bad for honeybees, but, honeybees are only one of the pollinator species, and yes, they are the keystone foundational species species of production agriculture, because we can move hundreds and hundreds of colonies to 500 acres of apples or 200 acres of cherries and get pollination. But there's also many, many other bees, bumblebees and other solitary bees that are good for pollinating in suburbs and other rural areas. And with loss of habitat, they lose places where they can nest in hollow trees and refuse on the ground and what have you. So, urban sprawl is part of it. Not only urban sprawl, but, the things that we use sometimes in suburban urban environments to keep our lawns clean and weed-free, and this stuff washes off in the gutters and insects get this as liquid as well. And of course, I'm glad you said about food production. My question always is to people, do you really care if where food comes from? If you don't care and the grocery store shelves are full with food that has been produced elsewhere under unknown conditions, is it okay if the price is right? So it's all a decision we have to make.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for your call. A couple lines are open. We've been busy here. 800-486-8655 is our number. Somewhere in the material I was reading about honeybees, somebody said, and I'd like your response, there have been other fluctuations in the number of honeybees going back to the 1880s, when there were mysterious disappearances without bodies, just as we're seeing now. Is there something different about this?
Well, to me, there isn't, in my mind. Yes, honeybees have died, and there have been cases where large numbers of honeybees have died or even disappeared. But having been in this industry for 25 years going on, it's different because the bees do dwindle over time. But the interesting thing is that they leave a lot of resources behind. There will be a lot of developing baby bees. There will be a lot of honey left behind. And ordinarily, in these cases, there's secondary predators. One is the wax moth, and another one is a small hive beetle that will move in to take advantage of these resources to lay their eggs and raise their young on these abandoned resources. Well, these secondary predators are not doing that. They're waiting 3 to 4 weeks, sometimes longer, to move in, almost like you're waiting for the colony to air out or ventilate or something. And then honeybees, because they're efficient in these cases too, would go to another colony that has abandoned the colony and take those resources out to steal the honey and take it back to their colony. That's not happening as well. They're also waiting. So there's something repellent going on in these colonies, which is much different.
Yes. Yvonne from Brown Deer, hi.
Boy, what an interesting program. what you just said about the predators not moving in. Boy, bees are smarter than we are, aren't they?
They are. For an insect with the brain the size of a period, they do some remarkable things, and it's still fascinating to me after all these years.
Yeah. Well, I have a couple of comments, but I was wondering if the media have been alerted to this so that homeowners don't go running out to spray their lawns, which is such a popular thing this time of year. That was kind of scary that an herbicide could also have an effect on the bees. I have seen about 8 bees in the last couple of days, several bumblebees and then smaller ones that I couldn't get close enough to know what they were. But I would like to see more.
Yes, because, pollinators not only pollinate the food we eat, but just think of all the fruits, nuts, and berries that they pollinate that feed wildlife, squirrel and deer and turkeys and all these things. We all kind of forget that we're all connected and interrelated, and we can't take anything for granted among any of the species. We've all evolved together for a reason, and now things are falling apart for whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if it is true that spraying our lawns, obviously it's not good for the environment to do this, but if this is a contributing factor to the loss of honeybees, which could be a huge thing, it already is a big thing, but it could be even larger, you would think that there would be, that we need a definitive answer on that so that people can be warned about doing this to their lawns, because as Yvonne said, it's a very widespread practice.
Well, yes, and there's whole businesses, on going and spraying your lawn. And then, you know, if you look at the stuff that's put on golf courses, leaches out and runs off.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking not only about honeybees, but other bees and butterflies and birds and everything else. And I think, you know, the environment probably has enough load in it now.
Yeah. Thanks, Yvonne, for your call. We go to Joe next from Racine. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, I think it's interesting about bees. We all want to save the bees, but he talks about it as the guest. Thank you for the guest. Talks about it as an industry. And I noticed when I was out in the state of Washington, they bring whole truckloads of hives of bees in to pollinate the apples.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if the industry has become to the point where the inbreeding of bees has become a point of the danger for bees. And most of us just accept bees in nature. But when you say it's an industry, and when I see these truckloads of hives coming in to pollinate, you know, apple orchards, I start to wonder, are they inbreeding them to the point where it's killing them?
Jerry?
The honeybee's genetic pool is probably pretty shallow, Joe, because we haven't had a whole lot of introductions into the U.S. I mentioned earlier that bees are coming in from Australia to try to fill in some of the gaps of the loss of honeybees in the U.S. And then, of course, in the southern part of the U.S., we have the grumpy cousin of the gentle colonies that we use in agriculture, the Africanized bee, moving in. And so all these are going to be mixing. But I think overall, yes, I think you're probably right that the genetics is probably a component of this, that we, on some level, are producing bees that are pretty homogenized for the commercial industry.
Why are the African bees the grumpy cousin? It's an interesting description of a bee.
Africanized bees, the quick story was Brazil, a tropical country, had the bees that we have, but our gentle bees, our European-based bees, do not do well in a tropical environment. So the Brazilians went across to Africa to the same latitude, thinking, well, we'll bring some bees back, and it'll be better because they're in the same type of climate.
Hmm.
Well, this was a historical and classic environmental blunder in 1957 because these bees got loose, and no one had studied their biology or what they do, and so they are a super bee. They dominate the environment and basically have displaced all the gentle honeybees in South America, Central America, Mexico, and moved up into the southwestern U.S. in the 1990s, and were responsible for, I think, 16 human fatalities and hundreds, if not thousands, of pets and livestock as well.
My. Ooh, there's another show. Thanks, Joe, for the call. We go next to Steve from Madison. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad. Say, the reason I called is we actually have a honey extracting facility on our farm, and some folks from Florida have come up to our place. Let me pull off here. Since 1968, and they pollinate commercially for the cranberry bogs in the central part of the state, central part of Wisconsin. And just to put things in perspective, you know, we're one of the top two producers of cranberries. I'm not a cranberry farmer, but I realized that in talking with some cranberry producers that the strength of those colonies, as your speaker's talking about, is going to adversely affect their production dramatically. And so this hits home just in the state of Wisconsin. When you drive up to Stevens Point area, Bancroft, and up in that way, and you see those huge cranberry bugs, the only reason those bugs are there are because they have commercial pollinization.
Yeah, and Steve, you're absolutely right. And we actually have a growing blueberry, not cranberry, but blueberry industry here in Florida. And I tell the blueberry growers here that you can have the best blueberry cultivar, you can have the best fertilizing, you can have the best irrigation, you can have the best weather, you can have the best of everything. But if you don't have honeybees, if you don't have pollinators, your crop is zero. And this seems to be the disconnect, because there's an awful lot of time and effort and labor produced to make wonderful crops for us, but we're dependent on this insect for the actual forming of the fruit, nut, or vegetable.
Mm-hmm. And you're a lot closer to Florida, but I was just recently in Florida a week ago, and in Fort Myers headlines was speaking of the citrus crop down there, and those same pollinators are used to pollinate the citrus and oranges and grapefruit and so on, and apparently they've had some difficulty down there.
We have, because we also have another insect. It's a small insect called a psyllid that is transmitting or transferring a virus that came from Asia called citrus greening, and there is some conflict between growers and beekeepers, because the growers of citrus sometimes are spraying at inappropriate times and, of course, affecting the bee population. So we're working with the citrus industry and the honeybee industry to see if we can find some middle ground here.
Mm-hmm.
Correct, and I won't hold you up anymore, but, I mean, the beekeepers for the state of Wisconsin are, as a person who's not in that industry but has friends that are, I mean, are extremely vital and those guys make a lot of the honey that you buy at the farmer's market in Madison comes from clover and alfalfa fields in southern Wisconsin, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So have a good day.
Thank you. Dave. Thanks for the call. And when we look at what's happening with the honeybees in the states, is this problem more severe in some states than others?
We really haven't had the time or the resources to look at all levels of beekeeping.
Hmm.
We have beekeepers that are, we call commercial beekeepers, that do this for a living. This is their business.
Mm-hmm.
We also have what we call sideline beekeepers who will have a day job and maybe have a couple hundred colonies to make additional income. And then, of course, we have the hobby beekeepers, which is a vast group that will have a couple colonies in their backyard just for fun and do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So we focused on the commercial beekeepers now because they're responsible for so much of pollination and food production. And commercial beekeepers, as an earlier caller said, load 400 or 500 colonies on a semi and can be out of Florida and into California for almond production in just a few days, and then they'll go from there to Washington, Oregon, or to the Dakotas and
mm-hmm.
Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a vital gypsy lifestyle.
Yeah, right. Thanks so much for the call. John is next. Hi, John.
Hi. Quick question. Has anybody looked into, you might say, the feral or wild bee colonies to see if there's any clues whether they're doing well or not, or are there just not enough of them to get any data from them? Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you, John. That's an excellent question, and we've thought about that ourselves. Probably 90%+ of the feral colonies of honeybees that used to live in the wall of the house or a hollow tree that we would all see, because our bees would be all over our clover and our lawns and what have you, have disappeared. About 20 years ago, we had an introduced mite called the varroa mite from Asia that decimated colonies,
mm.
and beekeepers have to apply treatments to control this mite, but the colonies in the wild who didn't have beekeepers to manage them simply perished.
My. Let's go to Mark next from Evansville. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. I'm a hobby beekeeper, and I've been wondering if the colony collapse might be caused by differences in light. You know, we're all told to put on our sunscreen because of ozone, and bees recognize different spectra of light than we do for navigation.
Mm.
That's an interesting question,
yes.
Too, because, sometimes in the north where I've lived, you'll have snow cover, but you'll have one of those breaks in the weather and be a very sunny day, and the bees will go out to void. Bees don't go to the bathroom in the colony, so they'll fly out, and because of the reflection off the snow, it disorients them, and they fall to the ground. We haven't looked at that more closely, just because there's so many conditions that are different throughout the world where we're getting reports, but that is as plausible as anything at this point.
Yeah, interesting.
Thank you.
What have you been noticing with your hobby here?
Well, my girls are doing quite well. I just have three colonies that came up from Florida last month, and they seem to be doing quite well, and they're actually high in demand. I have it out at the farm because my city won't allow me to have them in town, and all sorts of folks want me to take them around to their apples and cucumbers and whatnot, so mm-hmm. they're doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Good. You're doing good, Mark.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for the call. More phone calls in a moment. We're speaking this hour with Jerry Hayes, Apiary Inspection Assistant Chief, Florida Department of Agriculture, looking at what's happening to honeybees in this country. This was noticed first in Florida last fall. The disorder is colony collapse disorder, and it's quite serious. Bees are leaving the colonies. They are not coming back. And scientists are trying to figure out what's going on here. There are meetings in Washington this week about this issue, congressional hearings coming up. What is happening to the nation's honeybees, who are really crucial in agriculture in this country and all over the world? One line is open if you'd like to join us. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls. Patty is next from Brookfield. Hi, Patty.
Hi. I'm just wondering, you know, I've been a homeowner for about 20 years, and we've used things on our lawn over that period. And I'm sure most people, you know, for 20-some years my age have been spraying their lawn, and then all of a sudden the bees are affected. So is there something different in these products that wasn't in them 20 years ago? Or what? How can it just be that all of a sudden spraying your lawn is doing this to the bees?
Well, yeah, and Patty, we're not pointing a finger at spraying your lawn is being the main cause. For instance, these neonicotinoids first started out as seed treatments to allow the seed to germinate, so there was very little product used. Now they're used as foliar sprays and systemics. One reason is they kill insects very well, and they have low mammalian toxicity. Well, when these are used on a plant and it's systemic, of course it gets into the plant's phloem and it gets into their sap, and when a biting or a chewing insect gets on them, they access this chemical and it kills them. But the thinking kind of stopped there, and what researchers and other people forgot was that this material can be translocated or transmitted up into the flowers of the plant and get into the nectar and the pollen, which honeybees and other pollinators feed on. So they don't get a lethal dose, but they get a sublethal dose. They bring this back to the colony and store it in there as pollen or bee bread to eat later, and are exposed to it continuously. And then, of course, you have the residue issue of how long does this material stay active in your lawn or in your backyard garden, and what happens when you spray and it rains right away and it goes someplace else and these insects, you know, need water too and pick that up. So this is certainly a component of it, but we're not convinced that it's the only one at this point.
Is there something new in these products?
Well, these neonicotinoids are relatively new. They replaced organophosphates, which were used a lot, chlordane and these other things in our environment, and were found out to be, you know, very bad for mammals and fish and what have you. So these neonicotinoids were developed that aren't as harsh on mammals and birds, but they're tremendously effective on invertebrates, insects being one of them.
So do you think that will be banned also, when if it's figured out that is contributing? Or,
well, you know, the problem is, because these things are used so pervasively and they're so good with not being toxic to mammals, that we don't want to pit one industry against the other. If we tell agriculture that they can't have neonicotinoids and we have nothing to replace it with that's safer,
right,
and better and cheaper, then you're going to have a lot of finger pointing going on, and that's not going to help anybody.
Okay. Thank you.
Would you recommend that people stop, though, using these? I mean, not, maybe agriculture is a different story, but would you say stop?
And this is just an opinion. You know, opinions like a nose, everybody's got one. My opinion is that, we should all follow label directions as well as possible. and use, you know, IPM strategy, integrated pest management. If you have something going on in your garden or your yard, maybe there's something easier than filling up a garden sprayer with something. Maybe there's a couple things you can do that mm-hmm. might be safer long term.
Mm-hmm. My question, though, Jerry, is if we found out that this was not as harsh on mammals, why? How can a product be allowed like this on the market without complete testing of what it does to all forms of human life? I mean, of life, not just human life, of insects, of lots of species.
Well, I think the EPA has been hamstrung and tied recently in looking at chemical and chemical approvals. Staff has been reduced. All the data that EPA, if I'm correct, EPA does not have any researchers on staff to generate any of that data. They accept data mm-hmm. from the chemical companies, and if it fits within certain parameters, then it can go ahead and be approved. But if you look at recent things, of the things we're finding in our environment, it's because probably we don't have enough oversight.
Right. Thanks very much for the call, Patty. Let's go to Larry from Whitehall. Hi, Larry.
Hello, Mr. Hayes. I have a comment and a question. I'm sitting here repairing bee pallets for this fall's trip to Florida as we speak, so this is timely. And I wanted you to know that a year and a half ago, when we went out to collect feeder pails from the bees in preparation for the trip to Florida, that's when I found that out of 750 colonies, I had 140 left.
Oh, my gosh.
These and the symptoms were, this was a year and a half ago, and the symptoms were exactly as you describe. And at the time, there was no media coverage of this, and it wasn't quite as, it didn't generate as much of a, we were depressed and frustrated, but you just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
This also, and let me just describe that to Mr. Hayes, that there were just small grapefruit-sized clusters of young bees with the queen in the middle. Along with empty hives and no dead bees in the area.
Right.
The stores were still there, and I want you also to know that this same thing happened to me on a smaller scale 7 years ago and 8 years ago.
Oh, that's interesting.
Exactly the same thing. And so you just restock. My question is that when I'm restocking these colonies with or these empty hive bodies with honey, pollen, everything in them, with new bees, which I usually do in Orange County in Florida,
mm-hmm.
The bees took to it just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And this spring I've got the best bees I've had in 34 years. It's a big question mark. My question is about the toxicity or the residual a period of toxicity for neonicotinoids, because feeding corn syrup for winter feed raises the obvious question. But do you know about the residual?
The residuals can last quite a long time, especially in bee bread, because it's a fermentation product and it's slightly acidic, that not only can you find the neonicotinoids, but you can find their metabolites as they break down, which are sometimes even more toxic than the original compound. And the thing that we found in at least the last few months is that beekeepers can do as have you experienced and you said, and restock colonies and what have you, but then at some point in time when the weather is bad or the bees are confined and are forced to eat some of this material that was stored earlier, weeks or months earlier, then there's a change in the colony. And so our recommendation is that, any colonies that you believe have collapsed because of CCD, you let them sit around for, 3 to 4 weeks. In Florida here, we even have one beekeeper who is accessing a radiation facility that they use to irradiate fruits and vegetables, give them longer shelf life to sterilize his colonies. And so we're looking at also other sterilants things that will break down not only pathogens but chemical residues, so that you know, beekeepers don't have to constantly be replacing comb and doing those kind of things to keep their colonies healthy.
The word seems to be now, and of course it's ever evolving, like noses, you mentioned, that this is all varroa related somehow, and it's a combination of factors all coming together in the last
Yeah, I think you're probably right. You know, varroa, you know, if all the listeners will make a fist and put that fist someplace on their body, that's how large the varroa mite is in proportion to the honeybee's body, and this mite sucks the blood or the hemolymph of the bee. It also vectors viruses. But, you know, we've had this for 20 years and had it under control, and some people with CCT have had no varroa mites to speak of. And so, you know, this is going to be a complex of things that are probably merging or intersecting, which makes it even more difficult to give recommendations to beekeepers.
Yeah, right. Thanks so much for the call. Let's go next to Carl from Madison. Hi, Carl.
Hi. Could you identify a few of the other common pollinators, and is it possible that one of them would be a likely candidate to be domesticated so that it could, in part, replace the honeybee?
There are other pollinators that are out there that are very good. Bumblebees are better pollinators than honeybees. There's some osmia bees, blue orchard bees that nest in tubes that are actually better pollinators than honeybees. The problem is that a honeybee colony, when it's healthy, will have 50 to 60,000 individuals in there, and then you can load 500 of these colonies on a truck and take them someplace to pollinate hundreds or thousands of acres of almonds or cherries or blueberries. The problem with these other pollinators, where individually they are better pollinators, is that you can't generally move enough of them or move their nest to a new location and have them adjust. So probably, you know, regionally or locally, this would be something to take a look at, and there's some things out there already. But for production agriculture, honeybees are it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carl, for your call. We go next to Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I was just reading an article about this colony collapse disorder and some studies that have been done over the past, 10 or so years in Germany. And the first one back about 8 or 10 years ago, they found that bees that were exposed to genetically modified pollen, one of those genes actually transferred to bacteria in the bee's gut.
Hmm.
And some more recent research, just in the last couple years, they found that bees that were fed the BT pollen from genetically engineered corn, like I think your guest talked about a while ago, well, that itself didn't cause much problem. When these bees were infected with parasites, like the mites you were talking about, then they saw drastic death rates occur.
Hmm.
And I guess my question is, with 40 to 60% of the corn in the United States being genetically modified and probably close to 90% of the soybeans and canola and alfalfa, which is a big bee crop, although that's been kind of put on hold, what are we doing with this genetically engineered pollen that we're putting out there, which is what bees are going to be eating?
No, and you know, another excellent question. Also, you know, the toxins in that BT GMO modified crops, reports out of Germany and France are that it does cause problems in their intestines and cause a certain protozoan, Nosema, to get a faster, bigger, quicker foothold. That's true, and you know, these crops are pervasive in the world and probably are going to be more so. You know, I don't know that man has ever, you know, modified the environment so that it was perfect, so I'm very concerned that we're being as judicious and careful and science-based as we should be as we make these dramatic changes in our food supply, because if we lose our food supply, you know, that's going to cause a conflict everywhere.
Mm-hmm. We're just not thinking very well, right? We're not thinking beyond the next moment.
No, we don't. We're very good here in the West of short-term fixes. Long-term fixes, we haven't done so good at.
Mm-hmm. So give me your best, and I know that this is a complicated, confusing situation, but give me your educated best guess as to when we're going to be able to pinpoint what the problem is and when we're going to be able to fix it.
Yeah, no, nothing like putting me on the spot. I would say with the appropriate resources, and, you know, I hate to say this, you know, money helps because then we can run more samples and get
right.
more smart people and everything else. My guess is that if we haven't found what is going on in a way that we can make significant recommendations to the beekeeping industry in the next 6 months, then we all have messed up.
Mm.
So
mm-hmm.
That'll be my prediction.
Okay. What a great guest you were. Thank you so much for being with us. I learned so much this hour. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Jerry Hayes, Apiary Inspection Assistant Chief with the Florida Department of Agriculture, answering the question, what's happening to the nation's honeybees? A number of you in Wisconsin know quite a bit about this issue as well, and it was rather alarming. We don't really know exactly. Maybe in 6 months we'll have a better idea. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and to Mimi Notstein for on-air production in our studios here in Milwaukee. It's been a while since we've talked about Iraq. We will do so tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock with Juan Cole, always a popular guest. And the second hour of our show tomorrow, Elizabeth Edwards will join us for a good chunk of the hour, and we'll be looking at the role of spouses in this very, very long presidential campaign. Thanks for listening, everybody. This show will repeat at 10 o'clock tonight, in case you've had a conversation with somebody about honeybees, you may want to direct them to this particular hour. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.